Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS-certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp. All made safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style. And a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 269. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going good. Time to talk some pitching prospects, which are always quite fun to discuss. And I'm looking forward to breaking some of these guys down who might be able to make the majors this year. And yeah, it'll be a good episode.
Yeah, somebody's already out there screaming tin staff, but there's a lot of fun pitching prospects right now. There always is, really, but right now, like, there's no clear-cut number one, like, so that's a great discussion to have. We got a lot of upside guys that were just drafted, guys like Noble Meyer and guys like that that are now in the mix here. So, yeah, a lot of interesting names right now. A lot of polarizing names, too, guys with a ton of upside but have been injured or haven't been performing well. So where are we valuing those guys? We'll break it all down, of course. But before we do, make sure you give us a follow on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm Eric Cross 04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. Please drop that 5-star rating and review if you have not already. We greatly appreciate that. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for all of our rankings and so much more on both of those platforms. And lastly, make sure to check out Rotoballer 2. Obviously, you heard that little change to the open of the show there. Obviously, Chris and I both write at Rotoballer. And the podcast is now sponsored by Rotoballer. And trust me, Rotoballer is a phenomenal site. Chris and I wouldn't be there writing for them if it wasn't. We wouldn't have agreed to team up with this podcast if it wasn't. So much great content pumping out every single day. Obviously, the draft kits, this rankings, every type of content imaginable that you could want, you know, whether it's redraft, dynasty, whatever. We got it over there on RotoBaller, and plus a lot of great tools as well to help you get ready for the season and help you succeed this fantasy season. Go over to rotoballer.com and use the code TOOLSHED to get 10% off any premium package, even if it's not baseball. You want to do basketball, football, whatever it is, TOOLSHED, that code gets you 10% off. So go check that out at rotoballer.com. All right, Chris, let's hop right into it here, starting with our top 10 pitching prospect rankings. Who's that for you?
All right, so I do have Jackson Jobe at number one, followed by Cade Horton, Paul Skeens. Those are all kind of one big tier. Then it is Ricky Tiedemann, Andrew Painter, Robbie Snelling, AJ Smith-Shalver, Jacob Mizorowski, Hurston Waldrop, and Kyle Harrison.
All right, so I have the same exact top three: Jackson Jobe, Cade Horton, and Paul Skeens. My 4-5, also the same, but flip-flopped. I have Andrew Painter now at 4, Ricky Tiedemann at 5, Robbie Snelling at 6, Hurston Waldrop 7, Jacob Mizorowski 8, Noble Meyer 9, and Dylan Lesko at 10. So obviously, same top three there. Jackson Jobe, we both have him at number one now, Chris. Let's just talk about him for a quick second here to get things going. Again, no clear-cut number one. You could probably ask 10 different people or 100 different people or whatever who are the number one pitching prospect is. You'll probably get 5 or 6 different answers. There's no clear-cut guy, but for you and I, it is Jackson Jobe right now. Hopefully, I get the chance to see him this year, though. I don't know how much longer he'll be in or if he even starts there at all this year. We'll see, but haven't had a chance to see him yet, and obviously, he left the AFL before we could, but just the combination, Chris, of the stuff is so electric. Such a high floor as well. Command and control for him is so good, especially for his age. He has everything you look for in a future frontline starter.
Yeah, he sure does. The command ticking up was quite significant this year. He walked 6 total batters during the regular season. No, he didn't pitch a full workload, but still, nonetheless, that's highly impressive when you think about the arsenal. When you think about what Jackson Jobe brings to the table, I think that he's just going to really pop off. And I think he's got the high floor where he could pitch in the majors. And I think I begin questioning that a little bit more because we've seen them go out and make signings of Jack Flaherty and Kenta Maeda, who Jackson Jobe is obviously better than. But still, that shows that maybe they want to slow play Jobe just a little bit, but still, you're looking at very polished fastball, mid to upper 90s, averaged 18 inches of IVB last year, which is well above average. That's probably plus range for fastball at minimum. He's slider, high spinning pitch. It was up to 3,200 RPM. It's up to 17 inches of sweep on it, averaged closer to 15, but still, that pitch is pretty deadly. He did add that cutter this year to help bridge the gap between the slider and the fastball. Sits in the low 90s, it's a short break, but it does actually play up with a little bit of ride too, which is what I like to see. So the changeup was also a pitch that made a huge step forward this year. It sits low to mid 80s, 15 inches of fading action. So you're talking over 30 inches of horizontal separation between those two pitches. Pretty nasty. Like I mentioned, he walked 2.3% of batters last year, posted a strike rate of 69%. He just super well-rounded, everything that you want to see in a pitching prospect.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why he's my number one. That's why he's your number one. Yeah, I hope we get to see him at some point in the major leagues this year, though. I think he still debuts this year, but yeah, not. I don't think he's going to get as many innings as I thought a month or two ago before they had Flaherty and Maeda. And I highly doubt I get to see him live this year either because they don't come, AA Erie does not come to my neck of the woods. They have a back-to-back, you know, series with Portland and New Hampshire starting on July 30th. So highly doubt, maybe, but probably not, that he's still in AA at that time. He's probably either AAA or up in the majors by then. But yeah, Jackson Jobe, just a phenomenal what he's done, how he's developed. And yeah, he had that back issue that seems to be behind him at this point. And just that strikeout to walk ratio is just so ridiculously sexy. The Arsenal, Chris has mentioned it, so damn good. So yeah, he's both of our number ones there, at least for right now. And then once we get past that first tier, we get the two high upside injury, I'm not going to say injury prone, but two pitchers that have dealt with injuries, various injuries and different injuries. But we get Ricky Tiedemann, Andrew Painter. Painter's a guy obviously coming back from Tommy John surgery. Tiedemann has had various issues as well and was limited to just, what was it this past year, 44 innings. And then he had another 18 in the Arizona Fall League. So I guess you can combine that and go 62 innings. But still, like his in 2022, he had 78 and two-thirds innings. So he missed a lot of time and had some command issues because of that. You got to wonder how much of that command issues were due to maybe not being 100% healthy. We have him back-to-back, Chris, and you have Tiedemann ahead. I have Painter ahead, even though they're basically a coin flip, in my opinion. I guess which one is less risky, do you think? Do you lean towards Painter because hopefully it's just get this one surgery and he cleans it up and he's good going forward? So would you rather invest in Painter or Tiedemann right now?
Probably Painter, because we know that his injury is something that can be fixed. He's had Tommy John. He'll be back in 2025. Tiedemann's stuff is just going to linger, sadly, probably forever. And I think it impacts his whole career. And that's my fear, is there's going to be really good outings. There's going to be really bad outings. Probably need to drop Tiedemann. I've held him in a spot. But at this point, I think there's just severe bullpen risk. So I think Painter, I don't know. He's interesting. I think Painter's upside is SP1. I think Tiedemann's upside is like a SP2, but the chances of them reaching the upside, probably give to Painter.
Yeah, I'm leaning that way as well. And I have dropped Tiedemann a little bit down my overall rankings, but he's still in tier two for me. Because after that, there's my pitching prospect rankings are funny overall, because you got like a mini tier one of Joe Horton and Skeens. Even smaller tier two with Painter and Tiedemann. Snelling is in no man's land. He's not near any other pitching prospect on either side. It's a good gap down to him, then a good gap again down to the next tier of Waldrip, Mizorowski, Meyer, Lesko for me. I have Tiedemann was top 20 overall for me. Now he's more like in the 31, 32 range. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of risk there. I'm hoping that can get better. I don't know. It's hard to say with these injuries and guys like this. And maybe he's just a guy that gives you a lot of per start value, but is he a guy that's Glasnow in a way where can you count on him for more than 120 innings? I hope so, because Tiedemann's one of my favorite pitchers I've ever watched in the minor leagues. I'm rooting for him. But yeah, there's definitely a ton of risk there. And maybe he moves to the bullpen eventually. That's not completely out of the question, though. That's still years down the road. So I wouldn't worry about any of that yet. But then we get Robbie Snelling in that next little tier. We both have him number six overall. And Chris, when people talk about the best pitching prospects in the game, and yeah, while we don't have him top five or top three or anything like that, or in that top tier, I feel like Snelling still isn't getting talked about nearly enough. And I'm not sure why. Usually the Padres prospects get a little bit of a bump. Doesn't seem to be the case with him. People think of him highly, but not in that discussion for top pitching prospect in the game, or even have him in their top 10 for the most part. I've seen a lot of top 10s that don't have Robbie Snelling, but look at what he did this past year, which was his debut season in the minor leagues at age 19. Started in low A, 11 starts there, then 7 starts in high A Fort Wayne, 4 starts in double A San Antonio. Overall, 22 starts, 103 and two-thirds innings. At a 182 ERA, had a 112 whip and 118 strikeouts, just 34 walks. So that is a 8.2% walk rate and a 28.4% strikeout rate. Now, I think he's still a great dynasty buy right now because, again, perceived value isn't nearly as high as I think his actual value or where I value him. So if you can go out and get Robbie Snelling, I did a post about some elite type guys that you can get without the elite price tag. He was the first one I thought of. So yeah, great time to go out and buy Robbie Snelling right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm not sure why the hype hasn't quite caught up with him. He's a pretty solid arm across the board. He's not flashy. And I don't think he's ever going to be like this super flashy arm. He doesn't blow away people with a fastball, but he has a really solid pitch mix, feel for the strike zone. And so that obviously is a big benefit to him that, you know, he's getting strikeouts. He's limiting his walks. Like across the board, I think that he's just a really solid arm. I wonder if the Arsenal still has room to take a step forward, because he ultimately hadn't really focused solely on pitching until last year. He was a football player in high school. He was a four-star recruit to go play linebacker at LSU, and then decided that, you know, he's going to take up baseball after all, as he was selected 39th overall in the summer of 2022. And then, so this year was really the first time he ever focused on pitching. So yeah, ultimately I think that Snelling is going to only get better. He's highly athletic, throws strikes, has a solid arsenal. So yeah, I'll bet on that profile all day long.
Yeah. He's top 40 overall for me. Yeah. I think he's incredibly undervalued right now, which is weird to say, but I think that's where we're at with Robbie Snelling. And look at more at the back end of this top 10, Chris. A couple of names that we both have in that back end of the top 10, guys like Jacob Mizorowski and Hurston Waldrip. I think both those guys, if they are still pitching prospects by the end of the year, which I think there's a better chance Mizorowski is still a pitching prospect. I think Waldrip 50-50 at this point. If I had to guess, he's probably not. I guess it all depends on the health of Chris Sale, the health of Charlie Morton, and others, Max Fried, if his arm holds up in that rotation. But Waldrip and Mizorowski, both super high upside. Those are two other guys I mentioned in that tweet that I mentioned earlier about guys that have elite potential without that elite price tag, or quite, well, not a little bit below elite price tag. Obviously, it's going to cost a lot to get them, but not at the same level it's going to cost you to get Tiedemann, Skeens, Painter, etc. How high do you see? Let's just assume they're both pitching prospects by the end of this year, Chris, just for the sake of this. Probably, let's assume that Jobe, Horton, let's assume all the top five or top four graduate here. Tiedemann, Skeens, Horton, and Jobe. Do you think those two have a strong case to be like top three or four pitching prospects by this time next year?
Yeah, certainly don't see why not. Who else is going to take those spots? It's like, there's going to be guys jump and pop up. We see that every year. There's plenty of guys that take their leaps that we don't even know about. But ultimately, yeah, I do think that's a real possibility. Mizorowski is interesting. His arm, I just don't know. Like, how's he going to hold up the shoulder? Like, right, all those things. It's going to be really fun to see. He's a fun arm, but like, certainly worried about the injury risk there. Yeah, this is a really solid group. And like you said, most of these guys in the top 10, I think, right? Like, going in my top 10, I think Jobe graduates. I think Horton probably graduates. Skeens, Tiedemann. Obviously, Painter's going to stick around because he's not pitching this year. Snelling probably does not debut unless it's late. AJ Smith-Shawver graduates. Hurston Waldrop, I think he might graduate. Kyle Harrison graduates. So, yeah, there's plenty of room for a brand new top 10 next year.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think Noble Meyer is another one that gets up into that range. I am absolutely, I love Noble Meyer. I think the upside is there for him to be an ace starter, and I don't say that very often. I probably said that about six or seven guys right now for ace upside in the minor leagues, and he's definitely one of them. I have him 9. Chris has him 14. I think probably both in the same tier and same overall range for the most part. Yeah, Noble Meyer, Mizorowski, Waldrop, they all have that tier one pitching prospect upside for sure. All right, let's go to the next set of our rankings here. We're going 50 deep in this episode, and we'll probably do some deeper targets in another episode later on in the preseason. But 11 through 25, let's, for me, that is, I got Noah Schultz, Brock Porter, Chase Petty, Kyle Harrison, Christian Scott, 11 through 15, 16 through 20. Got Drew Thorpe, Tink Hentz, Mason Miller, Chase Hampton, AJ Smith-Shawver, 21 through 25, Rhett Lauder, Daniel Espino, Max Meyer, Mick Abel, and Nick Frasso. Chris, who do you got in your 11 through 25?
All right, so at 11, it's Drew Thorpe, Chase Hampton, Tink Hentz, Noble Meyer, and Bubba Chandler. 16 through 20 is Jared Jones, Cade Cavalli, Bryce Eldridge, who I don't even know if he's going to pitch, but we shall see. Literally, my computer screen just went off. There we go. All right. Mason Miller and Noah Schultz at 20. 21 through 25 is TK Roby, Dylan Lesko, Will Warren, Rhett Lauder, and Gavin Stone to round it out.
All right. So Harrison is obviously a big talking point for any pitching prospect discussion. You have him at 10. I have him at 14. So again, not too far off here. And I think I've been, you know, pretty vocal that I'm a little bit lower on Harrison than most. What type of arm do you think Harrison's going to turn into, Chris? Because I think there's a wide range of outcomes here. And this is a guy that obviously the stuff has been very good for the most part. Fastball, slurve, changeup. Or is it called, they call it a slurve? What are they?
Yeah, I think that's what it's classified as.
Yes, I've seen it classified like multiple different ways. It does have slurvy action to it. I want to see what Savant puts it as. Do they have it as a slurve? Let's see here.
Probably a slider.
They have it. Oh, they do have a slurve. Okay. In his, how many starts did he have? 7 starts. He went about 60% fastball, 26% slurve, 11% changeup, and then he threw a handful of sliders in there. Didn't get a lot of whiffs on any of those offerings. And in the past, command and control have been pretty substantial issues that never really got better. Though walk rate was only 7.5% in those 7 starts with San Fran. But that's not quite a big enough sample size for me just to kind of be like, oh, yeah, it's fixed. You know, forget about the previous 2+ years inconsistent command and control. I know I usually stink with comps, but for this one, I've said it before. Robbie Ray really sticks out to me as a guy. You get a good amount of strikeouts from Harrison for the most part, but I think you're going to see those, you know, inconsistencies with the ratios. Probably will have a bit of a higher whip. There's been some years that Ray was very valuable, then he dropped off the next year. I think that's what you're looking at with Harrison, and I think people think that I'm just not in on him at all because I have him lower than most. That's not the case whatsoever. I like Harrison. I think he's a good starter. I still think he's like a great pitching prospect, which I think many people do think he is. I don't know. What do you think? Like long term, what does Harrison look like to you, Chris?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that he could go several different ways here. And while I think that the bullpen is probably an option, they're going to give him every bit of run as a starter. And we did see the walk rate improve significantly when he did make it to the majors last year. So I'm not writing him off as a bullpen guy yet. But he does have a lot of work to do, honestly. Like the fastball characteristics are not good at all. His slider, slurve, whatever you want to call it, is it's okay. I know you see labels of those being like plus or better pitches. But when you actually look at like the pitch data, it's like, oh, like this isn't really all that great. So I don't know. I think that Harrison has the potential. He said he's so young that I don't want to write him off yet, but he's got plenty of work to do. And hopefully, like we typically see this with young pitchers, but hopefully he's been working on some of these pitch shapes in the offseason to get back to, because like with that stuff that he had, like he was going to dominate the lower levels of the minors. Like, there was no doubting that his ability to do that. But against major league hitters, like he's really not fooling anybody, especially when he can't throw in the zone and the stuff's okay. Like it's fine. But it really hasn't wowed me, especially when you like look at the like pitch level data. It's like, okay, I think there's more to be desired here. I think that there is upside. I think people are very high on him. And I understand why. Like he's put up really good numbers. But I also think that stuff graded really bad last year when you look at that. And not many people are talking much about that on a pitch level basis and to pull up the, I mean, stuff plus last year was 94, which is obviously 100 is average. That in itself is not great. Like when you look at the fastball, the four seam is like a complete, some people classify it as a sinker, but I understand why, because it's a complete dead zone shape with like 14 inches of IVB, which is well below average, and 13 inches of horizontal movement. It comes from a really low VAA, like a low release point. So it has a really low VAA, but I don't think that matters much. Like when it's not doing a whole lot. So yeah, I don't know. I think that I still believe that there are better days ahead. The fastball slider or slurve, whatever you want to call it, graded out at 97 and 91 respectively as a stuff plus. Maybe I'm like regretting having Harrison at 10 right now. He still has a lot of questions to answer is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's an odd profile. Something I just realized when looking at a Savant page that his slurve and changeup have nearly the same amount of spin, which is really weird. His slurve is at 2011 and changeup at 1985. Like, you don't usually see those pitches so close together, or a breaking ball and changeups. So it's really weird. The slurve was actually hit pretty hard this past year. Limited sample size, sure, but 273 batting average against, 606 slug, only had a 24.2% whiff rate on it. Actually had a higher whiff rate on the four seam, 24.8. And that was actually a pretty solid pitch for him, 182 batting average against and a 287 wOBA. So yeah, I think he's still going to be good, just not great, just because there's so much inconsistencies there. I'm more in the sell high camp on Harrison if he can than I would be a buy right now in Dynasty. And speaking of another kind of high variance pitcher here, we got Mason Miller, who in terms of like guys that are ranked as highly as Miller is, for the most part, he's one where the range of ranking for him is pretty vast. Like, I seriously see some that have him, it's like a top five pitching prospect. Others have him like outside the top 30 pitching prospects. It's weird because there's so much, obviously there's a ton of upside here, a ton of risk, not a long track record. So that kind of plays into it. And now it looks like he's going to be moving over to the bullpen. So I guess right now the two questions are, do you see that move sticking long-term, Chris? And if it does, do you think his value goes up or down as a reliever? Because for me personally, I think A, yes, it does stick. And B, it's weird to say, I think his value goes up. Even though it's weird. So I moved him down in my prospect rankings. So the initial value obviously takes a hit because you think impact starter has more fantasy potential than an impact reliever. But at the same time, I think he's going to be a guy that was just going to struggle to stay healthy. And we're going to have a lot of years of him just missing a ton of time, multiple IL stints. So I think the long term, it's good for his value. It's weird to say that's like down now, but up long term. But I think he could be a top 10 reliever if he can stay healthy. He's got the stuff for sure. The upper 90s heat, that wipeout slider. And I think he's going to be the guy there in Oakland. They don't really have anybody else to take it from him. I think this is a good move long term for him.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I've long said it, like, as everybody was deeming him the top starting pitching prospect, like, he's a reliever. That's where he thrives. He's never been able to handle a starter's workload. And I don't think that bodes well. If he has a long track record of not being a starter, like, consecutively, and like being able to pitch 100 innings in a season, why should we believe that he'll ever do it? So I think the stuff will play really well at the back of the bullpen. How many saves he gets, that's a good question, because the A's just aren't good. But still, I do think that his best fit is in the bullpen, and I think that we're going to see him go out of the pen and never look back. Very rarely do we see guys go to the pen and then come back and like pitch a full season out of the pen and come back as a starter later.
Right.
It happens, but not all that often. So, yeah, I'm actually liking the move for Mason Miller because I think that's where he's most valuable, because he can pitch. He can handle one inning stints rather than him going out and throwing three or four innings and getting hurt and being out for 2 months. Like, I'd rather him be in the bullpen where I think that stuff can really thrive.
Yeah, 100% agree. Another volatile but insanely talented player in this range, very polarizing pitching prospect right now, is Daniel Espino, who I had as a top five pitching prospect before he got hurt again. And I think obviously there's a lot of risk there. He's had dealt with various injury issues for the last couple of years, but I think health permitting, he could get back to that range. He's one of those guys that I alluded to earlier that has ace upside. And yeah, injuries maybe do limit him from getting there in the long-term picture, but if he is healthy, I think he can get back to that range. Like, you look at, Chris, I want you to guess, and from 2019 to 2022, obviously those are the three seasons that Espino was in the minor leagues before he got hurt. What was his strikeout rate in those three seasons? So basically his strikeout rate in his minor league career to date, what do you think it is?
I think it's like 38% or something crazy like that.
40.9%.
Wow. Yeah, that's wild. Yeah.
He has struck out 221 batters in 133 and two-thirds innings. You look at in 2021, at 152 Ks in just 19 innings, 91 and two-thirds innings. And then 2022, in the four starts he made before he got hurt, 35 Ks to four walks and 18 and third innings, nearly two strikeouts per inning. That's just insane. But yeah, we haven't seen him then. So he's missed basically the last 1.8 years of time. Hopefully we get him back in 2024 here, because I would still buy low on Espino, because I think the price tag has dipped low enough where he becomes a kind of a low risk potential massive reward if you trade for him. And we still have him ranked pretty high. Let's see, where did I had him? Oh, I can't find him right now on the sheet here. Chris, let's do a quick control F. Yeah, so I have him 22. You have him 30. So we still have him, for the most part, I think in the top 100-ish overall range or just outside of it. So yeah, I think he's still a great buy. Again, that perceived value has dropped way too low. And I understand it. Sure, he hasn't pitched in nearly 2 years, so I get it. But I think assuming he can get back on the mound in 2024, which does seem to be the case, I think you're going to see him shoot way back up rankings.
Yeah, and I know I think that he will. Just being on the mound and throwing is going to be pretty huge for him. So the stuff, obviously, we don't know what it's going to look like. Like, his shoulder injury is pretty serious. That anterior capsule, like, that's tough to come back from. But we know that Espino's throwing, which is huge. And if he comes back looking like a shell of his old self, then yeah, I think that now's the time to buy. Like, it costs so little. What's the risk? There's minimal risk in the profile by taking a shot on Espino. So, no, it's certainly something that I'm looking to do if I get the opportunity, because I think there's a potential for a big return on investment here with Espino.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. Man, there's a lot of high variance guys in this section of rankings. You got guys like we already talked about, like Mason Miller, you know, even like another guy in here, which you have 13 and I have 17, that we can discuss here for a second. Tink Hentz, I think people are going to hear that we have him both outside our top 10 and probably question why. But A, because I think that top 10 is so damn good. And I have similar concerns with Tink Hentz. And I know you do as well, Chris, about how many innings can he throw? Is he a long-term starter that you can trust to make 30 starts year in, year out? I know those are a dying breed these days, but like right now, I guess 5 years from now, Chris, is Tink Hentz a starter or is he in the bullpen?
5 years? Man, it's close. I do think it's like 50-50.
Yeah.
But I'd want to say reliever. I hate to say that, but I do think that's where it lies. But it's, I guess, like, go either way.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too, where I think that's a legit possibility. And he's one where I don't question really the talent, though. The fastball velo has been fluctuant, and especially when he gets deeper in the starts. But you know, I still think he's, you know, plenty of talent there. But again, perceived value is everything with dynasty trades and dynasty value. So he's one where I probably would look to sell high, or just put him out on the block, see what you can get, or try to use him as a sweetener in a deal to get a better player or whatever. So yeah, I think that's where I'm at with Tink Hentz right now. So let's go keep moving on our rankings here. Let's go 26 through 50. Chris, who you got?
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. So I have David Festa at 26, followed by Jairo Iriarte, Robert Gasser, Ty Madden, Caden Dana, Christian Scott, then Nick Frosso, Henry Lalane, Chase McDermott, Santiago Suarez, Nick Nastrini, Brock Porter, Max Meyer, Chase Petty, Connor Phillips, Jack Leiter, Marco Raya, Thomas White, Carson Wisenhunt, Ty Floyd, Sawyer Gibson Long, Luis Perales, and Wickelman Gonzalez.
Look at that. Finishing out with a couple of Red Sox prospects, and I have them right in that range as well. Yeah. So it's kind of fun. For me, I got TK Roby at 26, Eldridge, Wisenhunt, Bubba Chandler, Robert Gasser at 30, 31 through 35, Jared Jones, Jairo Iriarte, Ty Madden, Cade Cavalli, Will Warren, 36 through 40, Mason Black, Jordan Wicks, Ben Brown, Landon Knack, Anthony Salameto, and then 41 through 45, Christian Mena, Joey Cantillo, Reggie Crawford, Blade Tidwell, Jackson Ferris, who just went over to the Dodgers recently in that Michael Busch deal. And then 46 through 50, Luis Perales, Connor Phillips, Thomas White, Wickelman Gonzalez, and David Festa to round up my top 50. Before we get into the couple of names we have here on the list, Chris, I just noticed that we have it's probably the biggest gap we have on this list here. We have a sizable gap in Chase Petty. You have him 41. I have him 13. That's a 28 spot gap. I think we talked a little bit before we started recording. I think in the overall rankings, they might not be as big of a gap. So I think you have a little bit more pitching prospects in your top 100 than I do. You had like 28, 29 in your top 100 overall. I think I have like 18 or 19. So maybe the overall rank isn't as drastic as this, but for you, what put Chase Petty down at 41?
I'm at 124 overall, so it's not a knock on him at all. I think that it just needs to see the stuff in game rather than in bullpens. And I love Chase Petty, but right now I think we're going off a lot of low velos increased in the bullpen or the stuff showing in the bullpen. And his stuff showed good last year. Like the ratios were extremely solid. But he also was doing it with like very diminished fastball velocity. It was a weird transformation of like who he was as a player, like in high school and then early in his pro career to now. Like he was like 99, 101 in high school. And then he dropped down and was sitting, let me get the exact numbers up. He was sitting low 90s, like 92, 93 last year. He's throwing from a really different release height, arm slot. It's like a sinker versus a four-seamer. The command on it is much better. The slider is minimal velocity separation. Sits like 89, but it does get a ton of horizontal separation between the changeup. Creates really challenging spots for hitters. And I do, like I said, I really like the profile, but if the velo gains are legit, I want to see it in games versus in a bullpen. If he's sitting like mid to upper 90s in games, like he's shown in some bullpens, and yeah, I'm certainly going to move him up. But yeah, I think that if you look at him overall rankings, it's a pretty big tier. Like Chase Petty all the way up to like Gavin Stone. So that's, I could have him at 25 and I wouldn't complain. Like I just have a big glob of pitching prospects altogether who I think have similar upside. And that's where he fell.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think overall we only have him about 30, 35 spots apart in overall, which isn't obviously as big as 28 spots for the position itself. For me, I agree with what you said. I want to see that more in games. At the same time, even if he doesn't hit upper 90, if he's just mid-90s, obviously I think that's a big boost because that was the one piece with Petty. We're looking to, all right, when is that velo coming back? Because as you mentioned, the off-speed stuff is really good. Slider and changeup could both be plus pitches, and the command and control is also plus. This is a guy in 171 and a third innings in the minor leagues, only has 47 walks, and that is a walk rate of just 6.7%. So he's shown the ability to at least command his fastball, and I was hoping it was just an instance of becoming that transition from thrower to pitcher. In terms of the velo drop, though, I was surprised it dropped as much as it did. I think everybody was, to be honest with you, but so I'm hoping now that he's locked into everything else that we'll see that velo come back up this year. Obviously, we get the video of him throwing bullpens with it, like you mentioned. That's a great first step. And I think if you see that from him in season and he comes back, all right, he's hitting 95, 96 consistently with the slider and the changeup and that command and control, he could be a top 10 pitching prospect by end of the season. So, yeah, definitely Petty's a solid buy for me right now. But yeah, I just want to talk about him real quick. I just noticed when we were going through rankings that we had him pretty far apart overall. Another injury-prone player. It's like a theme of this episode. A lot of these guys have coming off of injuries. Another guy coming back here in 2024 after missing all of 2023 is Cade Cavalli of the Washington Nationals. He made his debut for the Nationals in 2022 and then has not pitched since then. But you look at what he did in the minor leagues in 2022. It's a 3.71 ERA, 1.18 WHIP, 104 strikeouts to 39 walks. Chris, after missing the last year or so, is Cavalli a good buy for you right now, given how low the value seems to have dropped?
Oh, yeah. I'm weigh in on Cavalli. I have him 17. So he looked like an ace in spring training last year before the injury, before he had to have the TJ. He was absolutely electric and lights out. And at that point, he was being valued as probably like a top 10 pitching prospect. I think that it's a good time to buy back in. We're now nearly a year removed from TJ. Maybe we don't see him until midseason, but I think he steps right back in to that rotation pretty quickly after a few rehab starts. I mean, he was back throwing in September, the beginning of September. I think he's going to be fine, and I think it's the best time to invest in him personally. And even in you probably don't need to draft him in most redrafts, but like in draft champions, he's going like 700. So I've been getting him in like every DC that I do, because it just seems like, why not at that price? He's on the Nationals, so he's going to pitch like when he's healthy. And two, this stuff's really good. Like, I think he could be an SP2 type. So yeah, it's an easy investment for me right now. And Cade Cavalli pushed him back up a little bit, just now being a full year removed from TJ. Yeah, I'm fully in on that profile.
Yeah, you know, I've always liked Cavalli a good amount. This guy saw, when did I see him? I want to say it was 2021. It's hard to remember at this point. I don't think it was 2022, but I did see in Double A. I'm trying to find like my post on Twitter about him, and when I saw him live, that one starts. I can't find it. I think it was 2021. It had to have been. So yeah, and the stuff was really good. So I think he's a guy that you bet on the stuff, and obviously it's hard to know how these guys are going to come back from major surgery, but the stuff was there. Maybe he is a guy where the ratios aren't great, but solid enough. Then you get that impactful strikeout rate more than probably. So that kind of makes up for it. And yeah, I think he could be an upside, maybe looking at like top 50 fantasy starter or something like that. So yeah, I definitely agree that it's a good time to buy Cade Cavalli. Another one in this range that is, this guy's getting really hard for me to rank. I've liked him for a bit, but now I'm starting, he's slowly falling down my rankings. That's Mick Abel. I still have him 24. You have him 29. So we're pretty close on Mick Abel. And the stuff is really good. Fastball, he's two breaking balls, change up. And I've seen him live twice, and both starts were pretty similar. He was missing bats with all of his pitches, but this wasn't, he was also getting hit hard because he was not commanding his pitches well, especially the fastball. He was hitting, you know, over the heart of the plate too much, was walking too many guys. So he wasn't putting those pitches where they needed to be, especially the fastball. And the walk rate, it hasn't gotten better. Again, I think you can live with a 10-ish percent walk rate, 10, 11%, if you have stuff. So that's what, kind of where I was hoping for him. Like, all right, just get it in the 10% or close to it, and I think you can be, at least live with it. But he has not been there. He's still 12, 13-plus percent. So now I'm like questioning. I don't think he's going to be a bullpen arm, so per se, but maybe he's just going to be a highly inconsistent and frustrating starter to roster in fantasy, because he'll go and look dominant one outing and then have six walks and four innings in the other outing. So at this point, I'm not quite sure what Mick Abel turns into, Chris. I don't know. Do you have a better idea of what Abel is as a starter long term?
Yeah, he certainly flashes like the upside of being a SP3, like high-end SP3 type, but I'm afraid the command probably holds him back a little more, to where he's probably more of a back-end starter, like if he does end up being a starter. And you really hate that, because the talent is certainly there. Fastball sits near 97 consistently. It plays extremely well up in the zone. His slider can be a really solid pitch. It gets really late bite, sweeping action, upper 80s, the changeup set 90 last year, 15 inches of fade, which 90 seems high for a changeup, but when you're throwing the fastball 97, so the separation there is really good between the slider and the changeup. He throws a curveball. As you mentioned, the strike throwing is just what's holding him back. Threw strikes at a 61.5% clip. That's a below average rate, and he walked nearly 14% of batters. I don't know. I think they're are some questions about what he develops into be, but the upside's there. But we need to see something. We need to figure out who exactly he's going to be, because he hasn't shown consistency yet.
Would you classify him more as a buy or a sell right now in Dynasty?
I think his value's kind of tanked enough to where at least it's worth buying.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd at least give it a shot.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I still think there's, I'd even say back in SP2 upside with Nick Abel. So I'm hoping he can make some strides this year, because maybe this year is like the really telling year. But all right, can he make those strides? If not, then maybe he's more like a number four that looks like a number two on some nights and looks like a triple A guy on other nights. I think that's what we're looking at this year with Mick Abel. And yeah, hopefully he can make those strides, because he was really fun to watch. I was like, man, if he could just locate his stuff better, that this guy's going to be a really impactful starter. So maybe he still gets there. But I do agree with Chris. I think the value has dipped enough where he's at least not like a strong buy, but a decent buy if the price is right in your league. All right, let's round out this episode with two picks each. Guys that are currently outside of our top 25 pitching prospect rankings that we think could jump into the top 10 or at least close to it. Chris, who are those guys for you?
All right. So, yeah, these are always fun that I see making that massive jump. And you have two good ones on the sheet. Don't want to obviously take those. Who will fly up? I do still believe in David Festa. He surface ERA was man last year, but a lot of bad luck. I've talked religiously about how good his arsenal is. Festa may not even be a prospect anymore next year, so I'm hesitant to say him. I guess I'm taking Henry LeLane with the Yankees. He's such a unique profile at that age. Like, he's 6'7", lefty. Like, he does everything that you want to see, and you know he'll be in full season ball next year. Hopefully he's in Hudson Valley and they come down to Greenville, because I really want to see him. So LeLane will be one of my picks. I'm 35 right now, and I'm fully buying in on him flying up the board to be a top 10 guy. And actually, my next one is a FYPD guy in Ty Floyd, whose arsenal is just absolutely insane. I'm just curious, because he threw the fastball like 70% of the time at LSU. And while it's a huge outlier fastball, like, he's obviously going to have to make a few more things like adjustments and throw it a lot less. Got to throw more secondaries in there. But his arsenal is really good. I think he's one of the most underrated arms in this draft. So those are my picks, the upside guys being LeLane and Ty Floyd, that will move into the top 10 next year.
I like it. I did look at LeLane as well. It's hard not to. The guy is so fun. Obviously just a super tall guy with great stuff. So, yeah, that's a great pick there. Selfishly, I hope he doesn't turn out to be anything, because the Yankees have him. Mm-hmm. I'm a Red Sox fan, but maybe if they trade him out off or something like that. But so my two here, I'm going with Jackson Ferris from the Cubs, formerly of the Cubs, and now with the Dodgers, came over in that Michael Busch trade. I love Ferris getting into this Dodgers org. Cubs aren't a bad organization in terms of player development, but obviously the Dodgers are like tier one in terms of player development. And getting a guy that has the stuff that Jackson Ferris does, it's really exciting, because you're looking at the three pitches that really set up for him on the fastball and both of his breaking balls. Changeup has been seldom used, but it could be a serviceable fourth offering to give another look to hitters to offset the fastball and the two breaking balls, which all could be above average to plus offerings. But the big thing with him right now is the command and control. This was his first year. He was a 2022 draftee. Went in the second round to the Cubs out of IMG Academy. So obviously a high school arm. Debuted in low A Myrtle Beach this past year. 3.38 ERA in 18 starts, and struck out 77 batters in 56 innings for a 32.5% K rate. But at the same time, he also walked 33 for a 13.9% walk rate. So with him, it's really just about repetition, strike throwing, and getting that walk rate down, limiting the free passes. And I think he could be, I'm like teetering like overall upside, being like back end two, high end three, but even if it's high end three with plenty of strikeout upside, like, he's already shown that. And I'm just really hoping the Dodgers can help him get to that next level, because he is a very fun arm for sure. And then my other guy here, I'm going Jairo Iriarte with the San Diego Padres. This past year, he pitched 90 and a third innings between high A Fort Wayne and double A San Antonio. Finished with a 3.49 ERA, 1.28 whip, 128 Ks in just those 90 and a third innings. That's a 33.2% strikeout rate. But another guy where the walk rate needs to come down a little bit 11.7%. So it's not terrible there, but do want to see that walk rate tick down a bit. But there's really good stuff here. Three pitch mix here, fastball, slider, and changeup. You know, I think you could be looking at a plus fastball changeup mix. The changeup's really good as well. A lot of fade and depth to that pitch. Slider does flash above average at times. I think he needs to get a little more consistency with that and just consistency overall. Strike throwing, again, similar to Ferris. If he can really start throwing more strikes, getting that walk rate down, I think he could really shoot up ranking. So these are two guys that, you know, they're both in like my 150-ish overall range right now in terms of overall rankings. I think these guys could both be flirting with top 10 pitching prospect status and top 50 or so overall status by this time next year. So there's four names to go and target in your dynasty leagues. And that is going to wrap us up for this pitching prospects episode. A lot of fun here. A lot of very exciting and intriguing names right now. And we'll be back later on this week. We have two dynasty pitching prospect, dynasty pitcher episodes overall, talking about, you know, the major league guys. And we have a great guest coming up on Wednesday for that episode. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.